Welcome, everyone, to another episode of Streamed and Screened, an entertainment podcast about movies and TV from Lee Enterprises. I'm Terry Lipschitz, managing editor of the National Newsroom at Lee, and co-host of the program of Bruce Miller, editor of the Sioux City Journal and a longtime entertainment reporter. And I kind of buried the lead here, Bruce, but it's not just Streamed and Screened. It's the award-winning Streamed and Screened.
Finally, at long last, we have made it. This last week, the Iowa Newspaper Association handed out its awards. And in the podcast division, those political people in the dust, the sports people, get out of here. It ended up being the little movie TV slash entertainment podcast that came out on top. And they said great things about the podcast. So, I mean, I'm thrilled. It also, I think, gave us a little boost when we needed it the most.
It felt good. We've been working hard at this for a few years. I know I'm not your first co-host. I'm second or third one in here at this point. But I know this program kept getting nominated. And it's like almost like the Susan Lucci of Iowa podcasting.
We were. Accurate?
Yeah.
But no longer. I was not there when they got the award, okay? But they said that the crowd cheered for Little Streamed and Screamed. So
the crowd erupted.
It was a landslide victory. I sound like somebody else, don't I? Yeah, so that it's just nice to know. It's nice. There's a plaque. So if you want to prove it to somebody, we'll show them the plaque. And
that's right.
Now we move on to another year. We're ready to see what else is up there.
Now, Susan Lucci, she only did one, that one Emmy, right?
She got a lifetime one, too.
I don't want to be too much like Susan Lucci.
We want to win twice.
We want to be like the Kansas City Chiefs and win it two times in a row.
Not three.
Although we might get denied three, right? Oh, did you watch the Super Bowl?
Yes, I did. And I think this is a blowout. I should go find something else to watch.
Horrible.
And whatever you want to think about it. But I didn't think that the halftime was engaging.
No.
And I thought it could have been. You know what? The ones that work best is when they have more than one artist and they're kind of mixing them around. I know what Kendrick was doing and I know what he was trying for, but I think if you are not on that same page, you start kind of drifting away.
It is getting a little tough for me on some of these halftime shows because the artists are just getting younger and I'm getting older, and it's sort of that crossover of like the folks of my generation. I guess it's starting to pass me by a little bit, but I thought the show was interesting. I'm not a huge like Kendrick Lamar fan, but he's obviously had the big hit of the year.
5-time Grammy.
Pulitzer winner, Grammy winner. So it's top-notch musician to do the show. SZA was there, and then Serena Williams was dancing around too. So that was fun.
See, it was interesting to see. I think if you look back, the best ones, you can easily name them. Prince was an all-time winner.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
But if you go way, way back, it was like Up With People. So I think we have come a ways. And it was also like the Disney people. They let the Disney parade come out there.
Oh,
and
right. Yeah.
So, you know.
Wasn't the first Super Bowl that had something like the Tulane Marching Band was the halftime show. So we've come a long way since Super Bowl I.
And it's a great launch for somebody. You know, it's if they're starting a tour or doing something, let them go.
Yep.
Here's a chance. And they don't get paid. You got to be wanting to do it.
You got to pack it in. You only get something like 11 minutes or 12 minutes to shove in a show. So it was fun. That opening scene where he came out, it's kind of like the little clown car at the circus. Car is up there and all these dancers keep streaming out of the car. I'm like, where? And then you realize like you could see it underneath. It's built into the stage. So they must have been climbing up. But it's just like, wow, that's pretty crazy.
Well, don't you think you could say, I was a dancer in the halftime show. Who's going to call you wrong?
Yeah, so Super Bowl, I did not enjoy it. I'm a New York sports fan. I do not root for anything Philadelphia. You never will get me to. So it's almost like, and I'm tired of the Kansas City Chiefs. I'm not really rooting for Philadelphia to win. I'm just rooting for them to lose. To me, this is the worst case scenario no matter what happens. I'm not going to get into it. But, you know, the show, it just felt like a dud. Kansas City was down almost immediately. It was never close. You know, they got a few points on the board late in the fourth quarter, but at that point, the game was just over. And honestly, even the commercials, what do I remember? I remember eyebrows flying around and a mustache flying.
The tongue one.
I'm not going to walk away from the commercials and saying like 5 years from now, like, oh, you remember that commercial from the Chiefs-Eagles Super Bowl? Like, I could barely remember them today.
So many of them, you didn't know what the product was.
Yeah.
That was bad. But for us locally, Cooper DeJean from the Eagles is from here. He was one of those high school kids that we followed. He was on the cover of our football tab.
Okay.
He was a big basketball player. So it felt good. And it was his birthday. Mm-hmm. He scores a touchdown on his birthday.
Wow.
I mean, what better scenario is there if you're a football player?
So other things going on, too. You know, so we talked about our huge victory. We talked about the Eagles' victory. But there was also, we're not quite to the Oscars yet, but there was an awards this past week, too.
The Critics' Choice. And I'm a member of that group, and I got to vote. What's interesting about it is that we're starting to see certain people emerge as the ones to beat. The surprise there is that Demi Moore still has traction. I thought that she might kind of wane at this point, but we'll see. If she wins the Screen Actors Guild Award, you might as well start putting her name on the Oscar, because that's kind of the done deal. But Anora won Best Picture, and it won nothing else.
Wow.
Does that say that the Best Picture race is wide open? I think it is.
Yeah. What did you vote for, if you don't mind sharing?
Brutalist.
Brutalist. Okay.
Yeah. I thought, and it won Best Actor. Yeah. I'm curious how this will all play out. And we still haven't said goodbye to Wicked. I think Wicked might have a shot.
Well,
Hollywood was so high on Wicked because it was giving a lot of employment to their people. They were spending a lot of money on a lot of craft areas. So I wouldn't doubt that Wicked is going to do fairly well in the below the line ones. And we'll see that emerge. It won't be with the Screen Actors Guild, because they don't go to those directions. Now we're seeing individual, like the Directors Guild, that went to Anora just this last week, and go, oh, I didn't think that that was really in the mix for a prize. So it's a good year, because you can't sit there and go, I think I know what that's going to be. It's not like the Super Bowl, where you can predict it after the first quarter.
There were a lot of really good movies, but it wasn't like a year ago where you had that Barbenheimer thing going on where you're like, well, this is gonna win for sure. It's a lot of really good movies, but not necessarily one that's pulling away from the rest. I did get to see a movie that was well regarded, but it's not one that, you know, is gonna probably win anything, and that's Saturday Night. I watched that over the weekend.
I hope you liked it.
I did. I love that movie. The funniest thing, now it's a really short movie, it was like 90 minutes, right? So I'm like, I'm just gonna crush through this thing. Except for I was tired and I fell asleep twice.
Oh, no.
It took me like 3 days to watch it. I was watching it in like 30-minute chunks and then I keep dozing off. It had nothing to do with the movie. It was a really good movie. I just was exhausted. I really liked it. The funniest thing, and you probably appreciate this, is, you know, I'm watching it and Andy Kaufman is in it. And I'm thinking, like, is that Greg from Succession? But I didn't look it up at all.
It was. And he has two roles in the film.
Right. And that's the other thing. It's like, wait a second. Is Jim Henson Greg from Succession?
It's the same guy.
Right. Yeah. And it is Greg from Succession. Pulled it off. But I guess, you know, one guy has a beard and the other one doesn't. But I thought it was a really good movie. I mean, I know it's not 100% factual. They've dramatized it to a degree. But it was interesting. I thought they did a really good job casting the roles. Like, Chevy Chase felt like Chevy Chase. Dan Aykroyd felt like Dan Aykroyd. Even, you know, like Billy Crystal, it felt like Billy Crystal. I thought they did a really good job nailing each of those things. Like, J.K. Simmons is Milton Berle. I mean, it's like...
He was like him.
Yeah.
You know, Milton Berle was a real jerk. I'm using that as my term because I don't dare use what I should say. But he was like that. All those old station managers that were there milling about, that's exactly how they were.
Yeah.
And I remember this period of time, you know, I was like, oh, it's all flashing back to me. The guy who played Dick Ebersol wasn't quite like Dick Ebersol as I remember him, but that's okay because I don't think he resonated with a lot of people.
The most shocking moment, I guess, of the film is the Milton Berle scene, which involves him revealing a certain characteristic trait of himself, which immediately after the fact had me Googling, like...
Of course you did.
Like, is this... And apparently he did get around with the ladies, and Marilyn Monroe allegedly claimed that, yes, in fact, Milton Berle
was the biggest man in show business.
Right. Yeah, I guess that's the way we could put it. Right. Yeah, it was a shocking scene. I wasn't expecting it, but it was a fun movie. I enjoyed it. So
this week is kind of the tribute to the 50th anniversary of Saturday Night Live. So you'll see specials cropping up. They've been doing interviews with various actors who are on the show. So watch. It's kind of their way of celebrating the show.
Right. Yeah. And that'll be, I think it's this weekend, right? The
Right.
50th anniversary show.
Right.
So I'm definitely going to check that out. And there's another show that I'm really looking forward to, which I believe drops this weekend also.
Oh, Terry.
A little vacation time. I want to go to a
Oh.
5-star resort, but I can't afford it. So I can at least watch it on HBO, correct?
If the snow has hit your place of the world, this is the way to escape like no other. The White Lotus Season 3. If you thought it was only good when Jennifer Coolidge was on there, oh boy, are you mistaken. Jennifer Coolidge is in this in spirit, and you do hear her referenced, but Parker Posey has kind of picked up the mantle, and she is running with it. She plays the mother of three kids, 18 to 20 something. She's married to Jason Isaacs. They're on this family vacation to Thailand. That's where it's set. And the daughter is trying to do a paper on Buddhism. And so she tells her parents, we're going to go on this trip. So they're there. But Parker is just full of one-liners you'll be using a lot of in the next few weeks. I mean, it was like stuff that, oh my God, I couldn't write it down fast enough. That's how funny these lines were. And she's basically kind of anesthetized the whole time. She loves taking her sleeping pills and all those kind of other emotional support pills. But her husband is just tied up in knots because something is going on back home. And this is a no digital area. Everybody's supposed to have a digital detox. Put your phone in the bag. You'll never talk to anybody while you're here because you want to resume kind of that Zen spirit that you lost. Well, they put their phones away, but he goes digging for that phone to discover what in the world is wrong with my business. And it starts imploding. What Mike White, the creator of this, has done has kind of created separate little stories and then interwoven them. They don't really meet a lot as a group. You don't see all these people going to dinner together, for example. You don't see them all on an excursion together. You see the group go on something. There are three women who were friends when they were children, and then now they're middle-aged. One is an actress who has some kind of a profile. The other two are in other careers, but they realize how different they have grown to be. The thing that tips them off is one says, well, did you vote for Trump? You didn't vote for Trump, did you? And then that kind of gets them talking about where they stand politically. So those three, Carrie Coon, Leslie Bibb, and Michelle Monaghan, are another segment. Then you have Walton Goggins and his girlfriend as another bunch, the locals. And then to tie it all together and bring it back to the first two seasons, I should say, is the woman who was running the spa at the first one in Hawaii that Jennifer Coolidge went to.
Right.
If you may remember, she was going to go in business with Jennifer Coolidge, and they were going to open up their own business. Well, she's resigned herself to the fact that she'll be working at the Lotus forever. And she's there to kind of get some clues from the people in Thailand about how they do their things. She is a game changer. She is so good at this. And that's how you get that tie-in that you're looking for.
Right, because that's what's really set the show is it's an ensemble cast, but there's always that expectation that somebody's going to be in it to connect the season. So this is Natasha Rothwell, who played Belinda in season
Right.
one, but wasn't there. But the Jennifer Coolidge made the jump from season one to season two, but obviously could not return for season three for reasons that we won't give away. But if you've watched the show, you know why not. A nice ensemble cast. I mean, I'm excited. Carrie Coon has become one of my favorite actors. She's done so many things between Ghostbusters. She was in
The Gilded Age.
Gilded Age. She was in The Leftovers. That's really where she, I think, broke out. She had been in a lot of things to that point, but yeah, I mean, really has come into her own and has done a lot of really good programming. Fargo, she was in. Yeah, I love her.
The surprise in this one is Patrick Schwarzenegger. He plays the son of Parker Posey, and he's just this big douche, for lack of a better term. He's just obnoxious. He thinks he's good looking and everybody should fall on his feet. He's trying to advise his younger brother, who seems kind of withdrawn. He wants him to get bigger guns, and so he's trying to make these powdered drinks for him. And then he says, you've got to go on some adventures. We're going to go on this, we're going to do this, and you're going to see some of these women, and we're going to hook you up. And, you know, and the brother's like, I'm 18. You know, I don't know if I'm really ready to do all these things with you. And they do. And it is eye-opening. But the Schwarzenegger kid is good, really good as a, maybe it's just, you know, real life, I don't know. But I think he's very believable. He brings the energy that the show needs at certain times. When he comes on, you're immediately drawn to him, just like Parker Posey. Mm-hmm. And she really has these throwaway lines that are nothing. Now, Walton Goggins has the lines that I can't repeat, because as true to his past shows that he's done, usually on FX, he's a character that is really on the edges of collapse. Mm. And so in this one, he's looking for somebody that he is ready to even a score with. He goes and finds a friend, and again, it's a surprise casting thing, that is involved in another area of things in Asian culture that I never realized you'd be finding at the White Lotus. But just let's say there's a whole other thing that you, once you start going, the first two episodes are slow.
Okay.
And you're just kind of getting to know the people.
Yeah.
I'm in six now, and there's only eight, and it's moving so fast in six that you can't keep track of everything. The three women find different people, and they start splitting off. The former employee of the first one, she finds people. There are snakes in this. There are lizards in this. There are monkeys. And the monkeys are like the artwork in the second one, where they're kind of, the eyes are watching all the time. It almost looks like National Geographic filmed this. That's how beautiful it is. I mean, it's a gorgeous, gorgeous show. And when you see it on a large screen, oh my God, it just pops. Have no worries. It is going to match every expectation you had for it.
Good.
And make you say, oh, I can hardly wait for season four, because it has already been ordered.
It has been. That was my next question. Yep. So we know that this is going to just keep on going. You remember however many years ago when the first season came, and it just was assumed it was a one and done. Like, this is, it's not meant to be an anthology, but it was so good. You needed more, and they're delivering.
I was able to talk with people from the show, and Mike White said that he did miss having Jennifer Coolidge in this.
Okay.
You know, because she was kind of his muse for the whole series, and there was no way to do it after they had the ending in two. But I think finding another character that's very much of that same lightheaded ilk, and that's Parker. That is Parker. It's like he's got his own, like Christopher Guest, where they have this repertory company that works with them, and they pop up like this. And like I say, some of the surprise performances you'll see, it isn't all just the ones who are listed in the credits, which, by the way, take a long time at the beginning of each show.
Oh.
You go, can I zip through this somehow? Can I skip credits? I don't want to recap. I want to just get to the heart of it. And they're about 60 minutes each episode. So you're getting 60 stuffed minutes.
Wow.
It's not like you go, oh, they're going to go to dinner together again. I don't want that.
Yeah.
This is like a lot.
I was curious, and you know, when there was just more speculation as to what would happen in season three, but also who would come back. Because the assumption all along was that there was going to be somebody from a past cast would come back to keep tying things together. I know there was a lot of speculation, I think, at the time that Michael Imperioli, who was Christopher Moltisanti on The Sopranos, might be that person to come back. But I was a little disappointed it wasn't, but it sounds like they did a nice job with their choice.
And Natasha is a great link, because it goes all the way back. And there's also another link, but I can't say anything more than that.
Okay. We'll leave it at that. You know who else I enjoyed from season two and I would have liked to have seen come back, but didn't, was F. Murray Abraham, who I thought played the older gentleman, and I thought he was a nice addition in season two. But Here we are.
It's funny how they make reference to things that could easily have fit for those. It's like almost, I think when he was writing this, he might have stolen some lines that he didn't use in the first two and is putting them in this one because the lines could easily apply to some of the characters, but they aren't the same. It isn't like I'm taking like the family from the first one and then just duplicating it for the family in this one. They're different families. And I think this is a richer crowd. They're more well-heeled.
Yeah.
And so more dislikable.
Okay.
If you will.
Okay. Well, there you go.
Watch it. It starts this week and I think you'll be hooked. And I think they drop so many each week.
Okay.
It's not like you get them all at once. Right. I don't think.
No, I think it is. Yeah. It's like 1 week for 6 weeks.
Yeah.
Yeah. It seems like, you know, we've come back. There's a handful of shows that have coming back. You know, White Lotus is here. My wife and I have been watching Severance season two. It felt like that took 20 years for season one and season two to come up.
1923 is coming back.
Yeah, yeah. And then at some point this year, we'll get another season of Stranger Things. Like, you know, those teenagers are pushing 30 now, but we got to get that show wrapped up before it gets too long in the tooth. But it's good to see some good programming come back to start 2025 strong, right? That's what we're looking for.
And I'm still in the pit. So if you haven't discovered the pit yet, get in there. I'm up to, is it eight? Episode 8 on that.
Okay.
So,
yeah.
And I think that goes 15.
Wow. 15 episodes. I don't even know.
What is this?
Does anybody do 15? Yeah. Wait. Was this 19?
Are these two seasons at once?
Right.
What are we doing here?
We got White Lotus, a lot of other programming. We're a few weeks out from the Oscars. And we'll be back again next week with another episode of the award-winning Screamed and Screamed.